Gonna be any snow, at least I hope not.
Yeah, we don't, well, it's supposed to rain. I don't know how their field is, so.
Okay. Just send me an email, just so I can remember.
Alrighty, boys and girls, children of all ages. Hopefully you all survived the snowpocalypse. Wasn't that just fun? The part I loved the most was the tease. So you get the first message, oh, there's just going to be a delay. And then, so I sit there and I do your class, do the video for your class. And then by the time I'm done, oh, no, now you canceled. I'm like, oh, I got to do three more. Oh, man. But whatever. We survived. Exam was Saturday, Sunday. Hopefully y'all got that in. I didn't have a chance to grade it yesterday. I got caught up being lawyer dude. But I have tomorrow free, so I'll start grading those. Papers are due on the 26th of this month. I believe that's a Friday by 11:59 p.m. I will remind you frequently. Any questions about the paper? Keep in mind, before you drop it, you go to proflamanic.com, go to the paper section, go over all the ways you can lose points, and make sure you don't do any. Because ultimately, your grade starts at 100, and I just hit minus, 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 minus for all the areas that you failed to follow the directions. And that's your grade. So if there are few to no mistakes, you get a really good grade on the paper. If there are lots of mistakes, your grade goes down. It's simple mathematics. So don't do something silly. If there's something on there you do not understand, don't try figuring out. Ask questions. It's okay to ask questions. You should never be afraid to ask questions. And of course, we've already had a situation where someone changed their topic. If you want to change your topic, just let me know by email. And just do it soon, because again, time is short. So, other than the paper, which counts as 20% of your final grade, all that we have left to deal with is the final, which is the remaining 35%. Exams 1, 2, and 3 total are 45%. So as soon as I get those grades done, just add them up, divide by 3, and that's your current average. Give or take any extra credit you may have earned over the course of the semester. And then once I do your papers, I will send you your grade, taking into account the difference in point values, and I will add in all the extra credit if you've earned any. So going into the final in the last 2 weeks, you'll know exactly what you need to do on the final in order to achieve. What I'll do is I'll tell you your current average, what you need to boost it up to the next letter grade, and of course, what would be if you don't do it, you know, what it takes to drop the lower grade. All right, so line in the notebooks. Final exam is not cumulative. All it will be on is what we begin starting with today until we end up at the end of the semester, which is Tuesday, May 7th. That's the last day of class. All right, so we've dealt with Europe over hundreds of years. We dealt with the biggest event around 1,000. Of course, that was the Crusades, when the Europeans first started getting a European identity and essentially sought to wage war to free the Holy Land from the infidels. We saw that it wasn't just the Crusades going on during that period. There was a whole bunch of other crises that were emerging, from plagues and invasions to political intrigue and chaos and war. Then we went on and I think we dealt with, it was the Age of Exploration. We talked about that. Talked about mercantilism. Talked about the desire to establish colonies for economic gain. And then we talked about the Protestant Reformation, when the universality of Europe split into multiple factions, and of course, state building. Finished up dealing with the least absolutist state in England, which had a constitutional monarchy, and of course the most absolutist state, and that would be France. Well, while that was going on, other events were taking place, changing the mindset of people. And one of the biggest ones was a movement collectively referred to as the Scientific Revolution. Now, to summarize, before we cover anything, essentially what happened is the perception of nature changed. People went from believing that everything that is in existence is because of divine will and shifted to a perception where no, nature functions like a machine. It has parts. It has processes. There are steps that can be learned. And of course, like any machine, if you can figure out the steps, you can make modifications. In other words, human beings had the capacity to a limited extent control the environment around them. Now, the biggest reason why was the Europeans were doing something that no one else on Earth was doing. They were going global. Everywhere else on Earth, the Chinese, the Africans, the Middle Easterners, even the people in the Western Hemispheres, the Indians, they weren't traveling globally. They were stuck in their regional world. But the Europeans were going out and they were penetrating. And you know what they discovered? Oh my God, people think differently. And it was shocking. And they couldn't understand why. They thought they knew everything. They thought they knew how the world worked. But lo and behold, you go into these other parts of these worlds, these other cultures have different understandings of reality. And this was mind-blowing. So that caused them to question. What's up with this? Are our ideas correct? Are their ideas correct? And they began trying to research. Scratch below the surface, trying to figure things out. And lo and behold, they discovered something. That there are actually facts which are universal. There are universal truths. The biggest thing is that nature runs on processes with mechanical precision. I'm sure you all had to take science classes, biology, chemistry, physics. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that all not just math? It's all calculations. It's all measurements. It's all mathematically based. They also realize that things as you see them are not just those things. You know, a tree isn't just a tree. A person isn't just a person. But rather, they're made up of smaller bits, pieces of matter, like Legos. I'm sure you all played with Legos at some point in your life. Legos are wonderful toys because you can make Legos into anything that your mind can imagine. And the kind of kid I was, the best thing was is once I made everything, I could blow it all up and then go back and build it again. Well, these scientists observing nature, experimenting with nature, realize that everything that you see is made up of tiny little bits. Molecules, atoms, electrons, protons. What separates us is the arrangement. You know, we have material in us that's the same as the desk that you're sitting at. But why is the desk not alive and you are? Well, it's just the arrangement of that matter. They also discovered that matter moves. Everything is in constant motion. Even when standing still, you are still moving. You are literally moving through space, because we're on this big spaceship Earth that's traveling throughout the galaxy. But we're also moving through time. And no matter what we want, we can't stop it. You all are aging. You're all getting older by the second. And the amount of time you have is short. And at some point, you're out of time. And it's universal for everybody. These scientists, for the first time in human history, started realizing that the physical world is knowable. It's possible for human beings to figure out how things work. It's just a matter of figuring out how. They also created a new religion, a new philosophy, science.
Science with its rules and dogma.
Of course, the two biggest elements of science are observation and experimentation. And the scientific revolution would also set new standards on what is knowledge. That human beings all have the ability to unlock and explain the secrets of nature. And that once you figure that out, you can impact those around you, positively and negatively. Look at that. I gave you the conclusion before we did anything. Questions? All right, why was this a big deal? Well, for hundreds and hundreds of years, the concept of what reality was and how the universe functioned was based upon the ideas of people who lived centuries before. All knowledge was essentially a blend of the ideas that emerged in Christianity combined with the ideas of the ancient Greeks. Any of you ever had a chance to study ancient Greek civilization? No pun intended, but they literally were centuries above everybody else. It was the Greeks who first figured out the earth was round. It was the Greeks who first figured out concepts of gravity. It was the Greeks who first engaged in what we could consider modern medical science. Heck, it was the Greeks who came up with the first ideas of philosophy, you know, the meaning of life. It was the Greeks who first realized about atoms and molecules and smaller bits. The Greeks were light years ahead of everybody else. But of course, when the Greek world went through Roman control and then eventually morphed into Christianity, the Christian philosophy blended with the Greek science, and that became new perceptions of reality. So some of the facts that the Greeks discovered were kind of pushed aside when it was inconvenient to the ideas of the church, or churches. The two that made the biggest impact on defining reality was the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle and the Roman philosopher Claudius Ptolemaeus, commonly referred to as Ptolemy. According to these two, the universe exists in what is known as a geocentric existence. A geocentric universe. Meaning, the Earth is at the center of reality. And that the things, when you look up in the sky, the stars, well, all of those things, they're not real. They're not substantive. Because what's above are the heavens. And that's the realm of the gods. So, what's up there is different than what's down here. Up there, stuff is made of divine ether. The spiritual essence of the heavens. We can't touch it. We can't experience it because we're not gods. Instead, we're stuck here. Unlike Earth, which does have the capacity for change, the heavens, according to the ancients, was immortal. It never changed. I mean, after all, have you ever seen a star cease to exist in your lifetime? If you live in a place where you can see stars, I can guarantee you, from the time you were born up until tomorrow, you go outside and you look up in the sky and those same things will be there. So that's permanent. That's forever. It's just down here where change happens. Of course, sprinkle in the Christian ideas, because this is the realm in which is temporal. It's temporary. And it's here where human beings earned the right to go up or go down. So the earth is in the middle, heaven is above, and of course, hell is below. Hundreds of years. These were the facts. This was the truth. This was knowledge. Until, I've already talked about that distinction, heaven and earth. There. Until a bunch of thinkers in the 16th century and 15th century, same time as the Protestant Reformation, same times as the Age of Exploration, basically took the old way and shattered it. The most famous individual to lead this movement was, interestingly enough, a Polack. Nicholas Copernicus. Nicholas Copernicus. He was the first man to take reality and break it apart. Now, interestingly enough, he actually was not what we would consider to be a scientist. In fact, he was a mathematician and a renowned economist. Ironically, and you probably never learned this in school, it was Copernicus who developed a series of economic theories which are the foundation of capitalism. He came up with the quantity theory of money. Simply put, the prices of things, goods, services, are in direct proportion to the money that's in circulation. In other words, if there's lots of money in circulation, prices get cheap, because the value of money is cheap. But if there's less money in circulation, prices go up. Supply and demand. Bet you never knew it was him who came up with that idea. Well, here's the thing. Have you ever heard the expression, all work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy?
Yeah,
that's what's like high school. Yeah. From The Shining. Dun, dun, dun.
He worked in banking, in finance. But during the night, he was fascinated with the heavens.
He loved looking up. And he would spend all his free time not only observing all of the celestial bodies, but documenting in journals what he could see on every given night, any given night. Now, here's the funny thing. They knew about the stars, the constellations, and several planets. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Those, of course, had been long identified by the Greeks. There also was all of the stars and everything. Any of you ever go out somewhere, like in the middle of the country, or in Canada, where there are no cities? Urban centers are just absolutely destructive. Because they, at night, they emit light pollution.
And even here, you're so close to Worcester that it obscures the sky. But if you go out in the middle of the country, God's country, go up to Canada, where there's nothing, the amount of stars that you can see is mind-boggling.
Well, that's the way it used to be for everyone on Earth. So even though he was living in Poland, he could just go out, look outside his window, and look up. And he started documenting, like I said. But then something was puzzling. He, in his awesome house, with his awesome window, looked outside, up at the heavens, and he started recording Mars. Night after night after night after night, he plotted Mars's location in the sky. Because after all, in a geocentric world, everything revolves around the Earth. So you couldn't see Mars all year long, and it was just a matter of time when Mars would begin on one side and end up on the other, right?